Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
When you are through a storm, hold your head up high and don't be afraid of the dark.
At the end of the storm, there's a golden sky and the sweet silver song of a lark.
Welcome to Free State, everybody. We are still basking in the glory of Joe Brawley being back on our screens. I don't know what that means, you know, but it's sometimes I just gotta humor Joe. Make him feel. He rang me today and said, "Did you see me on the Late Show last week?" Yeah. And I said, "Joe, that's the third time you've asked me that this week. Yeah. You keep asking me. Well, which makes me wonder how many people you're asking that to."
But. You know, we were, you know, on that sort of subject that we were discussing about community. I mean, I immersed myself obviously in organ donation and cystic fibrosis and all of that from about sort of 2012 onwards, because it was a door into a world that I hadn't really thought about. You know, we see all the poignant stories and we, you know, the happy endings and the tragic endings, but until you sort of really immerse yourself in it, you can't really understand it, which is what I did. It probably had quite a toll on me personally to do that. But it, you know, it was the most powerful journey in education for me. Like, I mean, the example to me was that if you want to do something, if you want to do something really quickly and get people involved, do it through the GAA. I mean, it just spreads like wildfire. It spreads all over the world. You know, when I started the organ donation campaign, they had this idea that we would have a logo called Opt for Life. You know, it would be just a campaign, you know, no funds. And we would work through sports clubs. And I mean, the GAA just, you know. Porrick Duffy put it in the programs for all the match days for the championship that year. You know, immediately the Doyle was involved. You know, Terry Buttimer, the most senior of the Fine Gael senators in the Shannon, I think he's the father of the house actually. And great J man, great Cork hurling man. And it just spread like wildfire. And in no time at all, north and south, the organ donation numbers doubled and tripled. you know, and it was demystified so quickly. Because once people in our community sort of saw the message, because everybody knows everybody, it just spread without you having to do anything. And it was cost-free. It didn't cost a penny. You didn't have to have any expensive advertising campaigns or PR companies. You know, it was a simple, clean message of community, of altruism. And there you go. You know, and within no time at all, there were, you know, within a few years, there were 400 sports clubs all over the country wearing Up for Life, you know, from county teams to club teams. You know, this year's All-Ireland Club Finals alone. Well, Lachlan Gales from Kilkenny in the All-Ireland Hurling Final, they were wearing Up for Life. And the All-Ireland Intermediate Champions from Armagh, from South Armagh, were Up for Life. And again, it was because it's a perfect fit for our sense of community. We don't have to be convinced that it's a good idea to think of your fellow man, you know, and to do something good for other people. Because that's the whole point of the GAA. JFK's famous speech, you know, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And you know, I sort of grew up watching the great Liverpool team in the 70s, and, you know, some of the really brilliant, brilliant soccer teams. And when there was a sense of bond, you know, Nottingham Forest, when there was a sense of strong bonds between the team and the community that they were based in. But now, you know, and maybe it was the serialization of Ashley Cole's autobiography that was the turning point for me, where he wrote, you know, about being in negotiations with Arsenal about his new contract. This club is in my blood. I'm Arsenal till I die. And the club's initial offer had enraged him, $35,000 a week, which was, I worked that out at 1.82 million a year. And Cole and his agent had angrily rejected this. And then Andy, in his autobiography, takes up the heartbreaking story. Somewhere along the North Circular Road, one telephone call changed everything about how I felt about Arsenal. "Ash, are you listening?" said a hyperventilating Jonathan. That's his agent. "I'm here in the office and David Dean, the Arsenal chairman, is saying he isn't going to give you your 60 grand a week. They've agreed 55,000 and this is their best and final offer. Are you happy with that?" I thought that wasn't bad. "When I heard Jonathan repeat the figure of 55,000, I nearly swerved off the road. He is taking the piss, Jonathan," I yelled down the phone. I was so incensed, I was trembling with anger. I couldn't believe what I'd just heard. I suppose it all started to fall apart from me from then on. I mean, it was only... What a cunt. "It is only by the mercy of God that Ashley didn't swerve into the ditch and damage his Aston Martin. I suppose we must be thankful for small mercies." But that was the end of Ashley's lifelong love affair with Arsenal. And there was nothing for it. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, you think about no-fault evictions or, you know, what's happening in hotspots around the world, you know. And then you pick up this autobiography thinking it'll be light reading, and then it just turns to heartbreak so quickly. there was nothing for it. You just imagine the desperate limits that Ashley was driven to, that he had to sign for his neighbours Chelsea and their Russian oligarch of an owner. And the story illustrates that fiction of connection between supporters and professional sports clubs. You know, it's you know, a one-way street of, you know, silly but I suppose enjoyable fandom. And I hear these conversations and I see the public tweets from people here about soccer. And genuinely, I'm amazed, you know. People need to remember. You know, people need to remember it was Jono's first game back in 3 months. I know we're all disappointed, you know, but there's still 6 games to go. Let's get behind the boys. Some boy from fucking Cabra. You know, or another one that drives me mental is wishing soccer players you don't know happy birthday. You know, happy birthday, big man. What a legend. Have a great day, pal. You know, blues forever, reds forever. It's like, What? Do you know what I mean?
But why? But I don't see any problem with anyone from Cabra or anywhere else supporting, like, you know, these huge global entertainment franchises, basically. But they're
no,
still.
I'm just comparing and contrasting, you know, the no, I know, but the bones but that we have.
With, yeah, but there, I'd say that people
with the sort of this one way street of fandom. It reminds me now of, I don't know if you saw the footage last week of the player who the referee tapped on the back in a friendly way after the ref just tapped him on the back in a, you know, friendly way after there'd been a wee incident where he'd fallen. And the player obviously thought it was an opponent and immediately threw himself in the ground and held his face as the bemused referee stood over him. And actually, they're all so used to it, you know, they're all so used to it that the referee helped him up. Are you all right? What the fuck? No. And now you've got a situation where it reminds me, you know, that they're just participants in a sort of sporting Love Island. You know, it's a brand. They're beautifully manicured, tanned, coiffured. You know, like they're silver hair and they're straight from the pages of a Hello magazine photo shoot, you know. And the supporters are mere consumers. And the fanatics there are just, they're super fans. You know, it's a sort of a, I don't know, I suppose they've got nothing else to rally around. And it sort of ties in with your point about that survey, that research that showed that middle-aged English people are the loneliest in Europe. You know, you sort of, I remember at the time when Lady Diana died, you had this sort of mass hysteria as well. And a lot of sociologists and psychologists put it down to loneliness. You know, that this was something that people in England could actually rally around, and it causes them to idolize people who have zero interest in them or empathy with their lives.
Yeah, but you see, but I think the one thing you're missing there, and it's probably it's a different type of community. But if you read Among the Thugs, the Bill Buford book about when he spent time with English football hooligans, and the thing he emphasized in that, apart from everything else, was that they were actually getting fun out of this. They were getting. And there was a kind of, a deeply flawed, but a community in it. And, you know, the one element that's missing when you talk about football is, you see, like the players come and go, but the supporters identify with the club for whatever, you know, for better or for worse, that's who they identify with.
But who are they identifying with? Like when
well, that's a good question, but they are identifying.
When I identify with the Derry Lads or with Dungiven or with the Waddy Grahams or, you know, or any club, like up the Knockmore Boys, for example, I know them. You know, I know their families. You know, I feel a strong sense of loyalty towards them. You know, I know that if anything goes wrong and you need a favour and vice versa, you know. I mean, I'm a bit like, you know, the wee shoeshine boy in Police Squad who's down the side alley, you know, doing the shoes, but also dispensing advice to everyone who, you know, people queue up and say, do you think I should divorce my wife? Well, and there are three good reasons you should do something. You know, how do I find the Empire State Building? And it's a constant, like, I'm an advice centre for the GAA.
But you see, but you're also making, look at what you've said in the past about Mickey Hart taking over at Derry. And now you're part of the, I'm not in.
Up
Derry. You're not in.
Derry. Listen, up Derry. Fuck Mickey Hart. And I'll tell you, if you fucking think I'm not going to support our lads, our boys from our clubs, you know, and in our community, because of the fact that man is managing the team, you know, you're sorely mistaken, you know, because in the end, it's our community. It's nothing to do with him. He's coming in as a professional manager. That's fine. He's doing a job. So, you know, that's the hypocrisy of the GAA at that level. But I've made that point already. That's only a very, very small percentage of what the GAA is. It's very disappointing that it's been allowed to develop. You know, there were simple rules that could have prevented it, you know, but you know, it's a far cry from putting on your Arsenal shirt, watching a game on the telly and then tweeting, you know, oh, gutted by that performance tonight. You know, if we don't buy a left back in the transfer window, so help me. You know, and I mean, the players and managers.
I like your Joe Brawley as angry football fan with, you know, his Arsenal shirt tweeting is a really good image, which I think.
you know, I mean, give the lad a chance. He's only been here 6 weeks in Brazil, like, you know. Anyway.
That's not how anyone tweets about football.
It feels extremely artificial, you know. Players and managers in modern soccer clubs, you know, they're not Man United to the core, nor do they give a damn about the supporter, you know. I mean, and, you know, the Argentine sort of soccer philosopher, Agustin Pichot, he said, you know, soccer is now a very neat product where everyone has a special haircut and brilliant boots and the grass is so green. It's very well managed. The problem is that supporters care more than the players. The player finishes the game and doesn't care whether he wins or loses. You know, in the same way Gary Neville or David Beckham don't love Man United in any real sense, you know, no more than Cristiano Ronaldo loved Real Madrid or loved Manchester United. They just had a very good employer-employee relationship, you know, where they were out in front of big crowds. They made a lot of money. And that's what it was. You know, and soccer used to be finely woven into the fabric of English community life. But with the Premier League, the advance of elitism, I mean, you know this. It's become completely disconnected.
Yeah, no, I think that, I think,
and over the land are in dismay. A lot of supporters can't afford to go to these games. I mean, it was Roy Keane who famously talked about the prawn sandwich brigade at Manchester United. You know, there's a professor who's a lecturer in. There's a lecturer for everything nowadays. Have you noticed that?
Mm-hmm.
You know. This is a lecture in soccer studies at Southampton University. Did you know you can do soccer studies?
I did, actually, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. You just tell them to know everything. Anyway, Professor David Weber, he said, you know, look at the way Sky overhypes games. So if Manchester United are playing Liverpool or City are playing United, traditionally, these rivalries were based on geographic proximity and a strong sense of community. Now, the emphasis is only the spectacle and the entertainment of the Premier League, and nothing is being done to address the chronically low levels of participation that now exist in the English game at grassroots level. There is a huge and growing inequality within English football, while England's big clubs have grown enormous and exponentially richer. Investment in grassroots communities has collapsed. And you know, that, I think, sums up the difference between, you know, our community. Now, the GA community is unique. I mean, I, as you know, it's 65 Roses Week starting on Friday. I think this Friday's the 12th. And that's the annual cystic fibrosis sort of week of fundraising for our, you know, friends and neighbours who suffer from this horrific genetic problem. And I started my journey into that by visiting in St. Vincent's pretty regularly. And Gary Dillon and Gary Dempsey had two rooms beside each other. Gary was a Calgary St. Joseph's man, Sligo. Gary Dempsey, St. Eunan's Letterkenny, huge GAs, and talked about each other very animatedly all the time. And it was only about 3 months after I first got to know them that I realized they'd never actually met. They communicated via tablet because they were both so ill waiting for double lung transplants. And at one point, I remember Gary, who was a superb photographer, very artistic, beautiful, beautiful human being. He'd been the secretary of the club, Calgary, when he was well. He loved the games. He loved the whole community, everything about it. But at one point, he was well enough to leave the hospital, and we went together to Donegal to Bala Buffet. There was a big sort of organ donation charity game. Donegal were playing the rest of Ireland, sort of select. And I think maybe the NYPD, in fact, it was the NYPD who came to play a sort of a Donegal select. And I was on the Donegal select with Michael Murphy, you know. And it was a whale of a night. You know, I was still in good nick. And I remember Murphy, like a big panther at one stage, a ball came in and I went for it, you know. I was quick and just these knees, this body came over my head and the ball was gone. You know, I was like, what? Where the hell did he come out of? And but it was a great night. And Gary was an expert photographer. That's what he loved to do. And he took the most beautiful photographs that night. You know.
And he came into the change room and he got photographs of Jimmy McGuinness, you know, who is, I mean, come on, got to be the best looking manager in, I mean, probably in Europe, with that beautiful silver sort of, what do you call the stuff that's in thermometers? The silvery fluid.
Mercury.
Beautiful. What mercury is it? Beautiful mercury hair in the blazing light. But he got photographs, stunningly beautiful photographs, like Sports Illustrated of Jimmy and Michael Murphy, you know, and of, you know, NYPD footballers who were there. And not long after that, Gary Dempsey got the call for the double lung transplant. At that stage, he had been given between sort of 3 and 12 weeks to live. That's what the doctor said. His lung function was 13%. And Gary Dillon was just about the same. And Dempsey got his lung transplant and Gary didn't. I was chatting to Gary during the week, Gary Dempsey. That September that he got his lungs, he got them, I think, about February, March. We went together to the All-Ireland football final. He was wearing his Donegal shirt. It would have been 2014, whenever they played. Do you remember they walloped, they shocked Dublin in the semi-final. The keeper made a terrible mistake in the final, short kick out. Star, Kieran Donnelly, intercepted, swept it to the net, of course. And then he said, what do you think of that? Well, you know. And the ignorant bastard. But Gary Dillon, at that stage, he was in the grave. And I was talking to Dempsey during the week, and he was telling me, you know, he's great. You know, he's got 93% lung capacity. 10 years on. And he was telling me, you know, I said, you know, Joyce, you know, it's like a, it's wild hard to take that Gary died. You know, he said, like, I regularly call into his grave, you know, just spend a while chatting to him there, you know. And you know, Gary Dillon left a huge imprint. He sent me, his mother sent me his Calgary St. Joseph's jersey, and after he died, arrived a few weeks later to say, look, you know, Gary wanted your oldest son, Rory, to have this. And he still wears it with pride, you know. And what a shame it was, but he's always remembered because he's part of that Calgary St. Joseph's community and the wider GA community. Mm. I mean, Michael Dara McCauley got to meet him and spent time with him. And that's the beauty of the GAA. It doesn't matter whether you're Michael Dara McCauley with the 8 All-Ireland medals or you're Gary Dillon, who's been isolated for a lot of his adulthood in a hospital or at home, you know, in the latter stages going around with an oxygen tank, taking beautiful photographs of his home place. And because we're all the same, you know, no one's going to be spirited away in a Range Rover, you know, with security men. So we're not waiting at the gates, you know, like the peasantry at the palace at Versailles, you know, and Marie Antoinette saying, let them eat cake. You know, to get a look at some superstar from Argentina or Italy or Germany. You know, our boys are just part and parcel of our community, and you'll see them all doing the what you would say are the mundane things of a Saturday and a Sunday. They're taking the under-12s, the under-10s. You know, they're putting their shoulder to the wheel like everybody else.
Mm.
You know, and that's another massive thing about it. I wanted to. You know, whenever we were building the hospices in Mayo and Roscommon, these two state-of-the-art hospices, you know, that, I mean, are a model of any hospice, you know, in the world. And, you know, the people have come to visit to see what we've done there. You know, and I mean, just it's just a small team who's done all of that. But what we discovered you know, because the Glamorous Brunette was the major fundraiser for that, and it was a major fundraising project. You know, you needed millions from donors. It was no point in getting, you know, doing bucket collections at Tesco's, which of course are massively important. And, you know, the hospice is such an important feature of life here. But what we found was the billionaires and multimillionaires who were GAA people, you could pick up the phone. Ah, Joe, how's it going? I'm 18, you know. I mean, one man who gave 2 million euro, you know, as if it was, you know, £100. It's because of his GA background, you know. But whenever you tried to contact people on the rich list who weren't GA people, you couldn't get a number for them. You get an email address for a PA. They're cocooned away. There's no way of getting contact with them unless you're part of that sort of very wealthy inner circle. And I think almost completely the major donors who built those two state-of-the-art hospices, you know, and you're talking multiples of millions, were all from GA backgrounds. I think, in fact, all of them were, because they got it. They understood the importance of it. They didn't have to be convinced. You didn't have to do, you know, endless presentations. Once they got it, once they saw the importance of it and what it was about, well, that's what they're about themselves. You know, they grew up in the GAA. They're part and parcel of it. And that's another brilliant thing about the GAA. It's completely classless. You know, it doesn't really matter whether somebody's got a few quid or they don't have a few quid. It's just completely classless.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
I guess that's also, like, so many people have grown up in the GAA, so you will have those people. It's just that's where so many people, they understand and they get a grounding and understanding of a community through that as well. So it's not necessarily that they're GAA people, so they feel like that. It's just, that is just a common denominator for so many people in this country, you know, that they will have that sort of GAA. And everyone has a bit of it, you know, even people like myself, you know, we come from GAA back families and GAA backgrounds. And again, I will say that I think, you know, those, I do feel, and I feel this more as I, that it, what a community is the most important thing, whether it's a, I accept everything you're saying. We're not going to have an argument. I'm not running down the GAA as you think I am, but I think, you know, I see it in my son's football club. I see that community, and it becomes such an important, you know, you become such an important thing for people, and it becomes such an important thing in our life. Like, I spend my, I like, It's you know, I'll spend the next couple of days worrying if my son's under 10s match is gonna play go ahead this weekend, because these are the things I'll spend, you know, I'll spend 6 hours on a Friday trying to organize a friendly if the game isn't called off, so you can get these kids a match. Because one of the things that is terrible in this country is how little investment there has been in the stuff that actually matters to allow kids to go out and play, you know, facilities, except, pitches, things like that.
Except for the GA and the huge sort of self-help ethos that there's.
Yeah, well, they own their own grounds. They've been able to get grants for them. They've worked that really well. I'm not denying that. Soccer has made a mess of that for so long. You know, that's because
there's a different ethos. But a lot of soccer, I mean, like Bohemians, for example, are now deliberately trying to organize their soccer community along the GA's lines. You know, I mean, whenever the Good Friday Agreement was signed and peace then descended after the referendum. One of the first things that the combined loyalist command wanted to know, they wanted to meet with the GAA, and the question that they asked them was, how do we create a Protestant GAA? How do we do in our communities what you're doing in yours? And there was a very good reason for that. They could see the cohesion that came from that, you know, those vital social contacts, you know, the absence of crime. And you know, that sense of, you know, being part of something good and being very comfortable that you know your place in that, and nobody's any better than you, and you're not any better than anybody else. I mean, we had this conversation before, you know, about and it was sort of half joking, saying like, you know, a lot of these people, just that we see who have, you know, gone off the rails, et cetera, they didn't have somebody to say to them, you're making a dick of yourself.
Mm.
You know, and I mean, I often say this, you know, that I have a simple test for people and for things that are happening around me, you know, would this pass the Dungiven changing room test?
Oh, Jesus.
You know, would it pass the Dungiven changing room test? Whether it's,
I know this test.
Whether it's a serious point, you know, or is it bullshit? You know, is it bullshit? And that's the GA. I mean, Shane Halligan from Mill here, he got double lung transplant as well. Great GA kid and all. And again, he was very desperately ill. Great Mayo man. Like, all he talked about all the time was his home club, Davits. And he was a great friend of Colin Boyle, you know, the legendary Mayo wingback. And of course, the Mayo team and his club were, you know, the whole community was acutely aware of Shane's situation, you know. And I mean, everyone was on tenterhooks, not just his immediate family. And everyone was helping out and hoping for the best. And then he got his lung transplant, the miracle, you know, the miracle. And within a year, he was the kit man with probably the greatest ever Mayo team, 2016, 2017. You know, the team that really gave probably more entertainment than any other team in living memory. But he was the kit man. And there he was in Croke Park, like me going down on the warden of an All-Ireland defence to hug him and just be so delighted that he was alive. And there he is, like the fucking kit man for this great team. You know, and that's the GA.
Those stories, and I think everybody understands those stories in a country like Ireland, where there are so often communities, and you know, and the GA clubs being at the centre of it, communities rally around these situations and these people. And make a difference. And, you know, it comes like that story we told about the funeral expenses, the club covering them, that does sum it up in so many ways. It's
one of many. Look at the Kevin Bell Repatriation Trust, you know, all GA people behind that. So like anyone who dies abroad now in tragic circumstances, you know, that's the GA community, you know, the Kevin Bell Repatriation Trust, that's what it is. And we bring those people home to their grieving families and we support them. I mean, Jurgen Klopp is leaving Liverpool. I'm going to finish with this. He doesn't love Liverpool. He loves his job. You know, he's been very well paid. It's a great crowd. He loves it. You know, in a few years, he'll be at Real Madrid. You know, we've been there after they win the Champions League. You know.
But you can do both.
He'll never understand, you know, in the same way that Professor Simon Shibley's struggling to understand this organization where we'll do something for nothing in return.
You know, I would say
the greatest thing, I want to just make this last point. I was talking to, I can't remember who I was talking to in the green room. I was talking about Jamie Wall, the Cork hurler who got a cut in his arm, sepsis set in the bottom of his spine, and he's now paralysed from the waist down. You know, he's training now to be a lawyer, and he's a great man in this club, and he's just, you know, full of life and full of enthusiasm for his community, and his, you know, and has plenty to be doing. You know, as he said himself, like he hasn't a minute, he has no time to sort of think about the what might have been with his legs, etc. You know, and you know, he was making the point, or we were both sort of saying, you know, I've said this before, that the most selfish thing you can do in life, right, the biggest kick you'll get in life, and it took me until I gave the kidney to realize it. The most selfish thing that you can do is to be selfless. The kick you get from that. You know, the satisfaction, nobody's patting you in the back, and you know, the things you do every day. And, I mean, the things that I just do as a matter of course now. You know, that selflessness, it's absolutely liberating. And it's you know, and if the more that could be communicated to the outside world, you know, I mean, we had Gary Stevenson in, you know, the world's most sort of lucrative trader at one point with Citibank, making $1 trillion deals, like making tens of millions himself. As he said, like, I thought that individualism would bring me happiness, that being a multimillionaire would bring me happiness. Mm. But all it brought me was depression and misery and discontentment, you know. And that is the lesson of the GAA. Free yourself, you know, contribute. Just contribute, go out there and give of your time for nothing. Give to others for nothing. Boy, there's no feeling like it.
I think someone like Jurgen Klopp would understand that completely, because just because somebody is brought up in a different culture and he's been in a professional sporting culture, it doesn't mean that you're dead inside or you're immune to the understanding of that power. And you look at that video of a meeting Sean Cox last week, and you see the empathy, and you see also somebody like Klopp, that, you know, okay, that great sense of
let me stop you there. There's no charisma. Doubt he's charismatic, right? But the thing of, you know, this thing now, which is part and parcel of professional sport, you know, going to the hospital, and don't get me wrong, all that's great. You know, the Celtic team came to the Belfast Children's Hospice and it was fantastic. You know, the kids went crazy. It was brilliant. You know, Brendan Rodgers, this was his last, whenever his previous stint as Celtic manager. You know, and I know that Brenton has been tremendously generous to the hospice. And that's great, don't get me wrong. You know, but it is part of the roster of events now that big professional clubs do. You know, they do their wee stint in the hospital, they do their wee bit here and there, you know. And it reminds me, it's spookily reminiscent of the philanthropy of big corporations, you know, which is designed to deflect criticism, you know, of the vast amounts of money, you know, of the elitism, the unfairness of it all, you know. And so I'm just not with you on that point, I have to say. I'm not with you.
Well, no, I don't disagree with you about clubs in general, but I...
And I think that, you know, if Jürgen wasn't getting 10 million a year to be there or whatever it is, you know, he won't be there. He'd just be somewhere else. And that's fine. Look, he's a very attractive personality. Don't get me wrong. He's not a GAA man. He wouldn't have a clue for a bust.
He's not a GAA man. We can say that. We agree on that. He is not a GAA man. And, you know, we'll just have to disagree on how important.
And, like a lot of those guys, I know he doesn't have, like, the designs, you know, sort of shaved into his hair, etc. But his teeth are absolutely extraordinary. Like they're
beautiful. Beautiful. You see, Joe, I'm not a GAA man, and yet here we are. You know, here we are. I've got one.
Okay, go on.
Before we go, I just want to just again remind, Friday, 12th of April, that's tomorrow, is 65 Roses Day. It's a national fundraising day for cystic fibrosis. And you can donate online at cfireland.ie.
Or 65roses.ie.
Anyway,
it's a great thing. Trust me, guys.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Dion.
Thanks, Joe.
Ladies and gentlemen, Alan Jackson and George Jones.
I can hardly bear the sight of lipstick on the cigarettes in the ashtray. Lying cold the way you left it, at least your lips caress them while you pass. And a lip print on a half-filled cup of coffee that you poured and didn't dream. But at least you thought you wanted that so much more than I can say for me. But what a good year for the roses. Many blooms still linger there. The lawn could stand another mowing. It's funny, I don't even care. When you turn and walk away, as the door behind you closes, the only thing I know to say, it's been a good year for the
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.